Welcome, and thanks for listening to Carbon Climate, an energy podcast dedicated to discussing all things energy, carbon, and sustainability. We also like to talk about what's getting hot, aside from our planet. I'm your host, Anya, and today I'm joined by my Carbon Climate co-host, Catherine. Hi, Catherine.
Hey, good to be here.
So can you tell us a bit about yourself? Well, before that, how's your week been?
Yeah, my week has been really good. I'm just trying to soak up the nice weather that we've had here in Belfast. I was last weekend at Helen's Bay, which was super nice.
I love Helen's Bay.
Yeah, it was nice.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, other than that, I've been catching up with season 2 of Blue Life.
Oh my goodness, yeah. I'm on episode 3.
I finished episode 4 last night, so I'm going to try and finish the episode tonight.
Oh my goodness, yeah. I always love that when a new TV series comes on.
Yeah.
And it's like, you're like, yeah, this is what I'm going to do for the next 6 weeks.
Exactly. So, it wasn't that
my day. Oh, brilliant. Well, thanks, Catherine. Could you tell us your job title?
Yeah. So, I'm a digital communications officer at the Carbon Literacy Project.
Mm-hmm. Oh, brilliant. The Carbon Literacy Project in Manchester. Very good, very good. And how long have you been in this sector?
In terms of marketing, I've been in the sector ever since I graduated, which was 5 years ago this mm-hmm. year, which is slightly depressing thought.
Oh, here, don't. Like, I graduated in 2017.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
And it's you know, you think, okay, yeah, that was only last year. I'm like, wait, no, it's not. That was 10 years ago.
Feels like yesterday. It's crazy. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I've been doing marketing ever since then. And shortly after I graduated, I picked up a volunteer role with the Carbon Literacy Project.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess you could say I've been in the environmental sector ever since then. My first volunteer position was a social media volunteer.
Okay.
My background is like fully marketing. But yeah, I guess just like spiraled from there and led me now to a full-time career in climate communication.
That's amazing. Wow, well done.
Yeah.
Climate communications, that's such a cool job title, right? Or job sector. You're like, yeah, I'm in climate communications. Like,
yeah, it is. Pretty cool.
Even I remember when I was at uni, like, I don't think a role like that existed, and it's great to see in the last couple of years, like,
yeah,
all of that coming about.
100%. Yeah, I mean, there's so much more range there for people who want to get into the environmental sector, and range that wasn't there even
mm-hmm.
I didn't believe that, you know, a job like that was possible whenever I graduated. So yeah, lots of amazing like opportunities, and yeah, I mean, every job is a green job.
Yeah.
So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, I like that. I usually like in the podcast, like find when talking to people, they'll say something and then it's like, you know, I'm like, oh, here, that's really cool, like, you know.
Yeah.
I like how you phrase.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, that's great. Look, thanks for explaining to see that skill when secondary school. Did you ever envisage yourself in the role you are in now?
Honestly, no. I don't think I ever would have imagined myself being in this role. In marketing, yes. I would have pictured myself being in marketing. Obviously, I was 18 whenever I applied to do marketing at uni. So yeah, I'm not surprised that I'm still in the marketing sector, but yeah, I think back then, like, I was like very interested in makeup and beauty and skincare mm-hmm. and everything, you know, like most girls in Northern Ireland are. So yeah, I think I probably that's the area I would have seen myself going into, working on like exciting like makeup campaigns or anything like beauty related, working with big names in the beauty industry and whatnot. But I suppose just like throughout uni and as I got a bit older, my values changed and I became much more aware of the threat and challenge of climate change, and yeah, it led me to where I am today. Yeah, just changes in my personal lifestyle
mm-hmm.
made me look out for, I suppose, the volunteer position that I ended up being successful for.
Yeah.
One of the things that I like at school, like one of the things I'm trying to like pinpoint with this podcast, in that at school, like, you know, maybe they've put like, okay, you have to go into this type of role or that type of role. Like, see, when I was at school, I was going to be a zoologist. Like,
yeah.
And then I kind of realized I'd be good at biology, which I wasn't. I was getting straight C's. And yeah, like, so even I didn't know this role existed when, like, I was at school. And then it's great to, like, there seems to be a really great like increase like in that, and it's great to see, like, I'm gonna group us in the same generation, our generation, like, you know, it's like, okay, all these green jobs, like, because as you said, like, every job is a green job, like, it seems to be, anyone who it talks to, there's some element of carbon or the environment in it.
Yeah 100%. And yeah, like, just going back to that as well, you know, what you said about school, like, you don't imagine that like certain jobs exist, like, we're taught like one pathway after uni, and just to like always check on job boards or maybe like looking at a more corporate avenue. But I think for me what helped was like following my interest and finding a job in that pathway as well. So yeah, I mean, in terms of like other people who might be looking to get down like a similar avenue, like, that's like a big piece of advice I would have, is like follow your interests and the rest will follow.
Yeah, that's, I like that. So you're coming off with some really good stuff here.
Oh my god. Oh,
but brilliant, thanks for the introduction, Catherine. So as you said, you work for the Carbon Literature Project, and just a bit of definition of what carbon literacy is. So carbon literacy is one of those words that, you know, if you say it too much, that, like, you know,
it's a bit of a tongue twister if you keep repeating it.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm reading this and I'm like, I'm going to be very careful with how I say this. So carbon literacy is an awareness of the carbon dioxide costs and impacts in everyday activities, and the ability and motivation to reduce emissions on an individual, community and organizational basis.
Yeah.
And the term carbon literacy began to gain prominence in 2009. When it emerged in the development of the Climate Change Action Plan for Manchester, which is where the Carbon Literacy Project, your employer, is based.
Yeah.
So it's come full circle. It's all connected.
Yeah, it is.
But yeah, like, so the plan aims to lower emissions by reducing demand and the use of energy and create a low carbon culture.
Yeah. Inspiring a low carbon culture shift is what we're working towards, and that applies to everyone everywhere.
So nice. Oh my goodness. I one of the things I like to do with podcasts is come up with episode titles, but trying to get them into puns.
Yeah.
And so when I was reading about low carbon culture, I was like, low carbon culture, I was trying to think, if I say low carbon, sure, it's our culture, like what people, because you know the way, like, people, like, there seems to be a Northern Irish thing, it's part of our culture.
Oh, like. Yeah. I like that. I was waiting to see what you would call this.
Yeah. there was so much, there was, like, I did one about like carbon literacy. It was something about reading, and I was like, oh sure, let's get literate with, or become in a literate with carbon literacy or something.
Yeah, definitely. Or it's hashtag carbon lit.
That is it. Oh my goodness, that is the new title. Like, well, I love how everyone's listening to this. Like, you know, everyone's like, they're figuring out the title mid-episode. Like,
yeah, we're just brainstorming.
Yeah. Because I thought I used, like, oh my goodness, I used all the carbon ones, because one of my first things was like, oh, how do you carbon? Like, you know, okay, you should just take this job now, because hashtag it's carbon lit is like the best thing I've heard, like, honestly. But yes, I'm typing that in my script now, just so I don't forget it. It's carbon lit. Brilliant. So you're saying you're I'm gonna like mispronounce the title, but climate communications officer for the Carbon Literacy Project. Could you take us through the type of work you do, like what sort of maybe projects you're involved in or tasks you're doing day to day?
Yeah, so my role title is Digital Communications Officer.
So I'll handle anything really on the digital marketing side of our communications. And within that, I'll oversee our email marketing, comms, website, managing and maintaining the content on our website and updating that. And also some social media and paid advertising as well, with social media ads. So
nice.
Yeah, it's all very exciting. There's never a dull day. We've always got a new campaign or a launch or an initiative or an event that needs promoting. And essentially my job is just to decide what channels are best to promote those things through. And yeah, how can we reach as many people as possible to, you know, sign up for an event or to get involved with a campaign and so on. So it's very exciting.
That's really interesting. You must be learning a lot about likes of psychology and like, is it, oh, people are on this this time, or
yeah,
like what types of people respond to the different types of like media avenues, or?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, yeah, demographics is a big part of it, and like knowing your audience is a huge element of deciding what communications to send them at what time.
Mm-hmm. But even like you're talking about demographics there,
yeah,
like demographics, like I know a lot of people who do likes of geography,
mm-hmm.
and like it's funny, geography seems to be that one that like obviously focus on demographics and people, and like they maybe understand that a bit of psychology, but like it seems to be that one where it's like a course that can take you anywhere. My this is going to be my thought. My twin sister's fiance,
okay,
is he did geography at university, and he is now a chartered accountant.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
So even what you're saying about demographics, and like if anyone who's interested in numbers, definitely look to your avenue. Like,
oh yeah, 100%.
But yeah, that's great. And it's even like climate, the like, sorry, I'm gonna mess up the word. The was it social media, like amount of work that goes into it, like you're talking about deciding on campaigns,
mm-hmm.
and like what works for a particular day. I love seeing on LinkedIn like all those particular, oh here guys, it's Earth Day today,
yeah.
Or it is,
yeah.
like world Health Day or something like that.
Yeah, 100%. That's like a huge part of our work as well, as like being aware of what awareness days are coming up. So for example, I mean, obviously in the environmental sector, Earth Day is probably the biggest one of the year.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's also like World Health Day, there's International Day of Forests, World Ocean Day.
Oh my goodness.
There's also LGBTQ+,
yeah,
like Pride Month, mm-hmm. Black History Month, everything like that. Climate change is an intersectional issue. So yeah, it's important that we address all of these awareness days and topics so that we can address the greater issue of climate change.
Nice. Very cool. That's brilliant. Thank you so much for that explanation, Catherine. Really interesting role, and hopefully it's inspired some people.
Yeah.
So your role, carbon, like the Carbon Literacy Project, focuses on the likes of training,
mm-hmm.
and like making people a more carbon literate.
Yeah.
For anyone who's carbon literate, or even to get into your type of company, would you recommend any sort of guides or training, like, you know, that they could do?
Yeah, I mean, the first step I would say is to get carbon literate, get certified. What we offer is a day's worth of climate education, and that is for everyone around the world. There's no one excluded in our offering. Essentially, it's a day's worth of learning about climate change, and also how it relates to you, your organization, your community group, depending on who's delivering the training and what you can do about it. So it's like very action based. At the end of the training, you'll devise two climate action pledges. The two best pledges basically that you can make within your sphere of influence. So yeah, it puts everyone on a level playing field in terms of climate knowledge. And yeah, we're just past 90,000 certified carbon literate citizens worldwide.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Congratulations. Like, thank wow. You.
Yeah. It's very exciting times, and we're fast approaching 100,000, which is an insane milestone to achieve. I think whenever I became carbon literate, which was in November 2020, my certificate number was like 15,500. So that was like 8 years after the organization started. So within 3.5 years or almost 4 years, I can't work out the math, but it's it's 75,000 increase. Yeah. You know, it's like an insane speed that we're working up. But I mean, yeah, it just shows the importance of climate education in this day and age, and there is such an appetite for it right there. So many people want to understand climate change better and what they can do in their lifestyles, in their organizations, in their communities. So yeah, I mean, could vouch for it all day.
Yeah. No, yeah. Brilliant. Like, brilliant, oh my goodness. Yeah. Like, class. On 90,000.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Yes. Okay. I think the numbers, I think that's almost fourfold in was it 3 years? Like,
you know, yeah.
Wow. That is crazy.
I'll just let you do the numbers and I'll do the writing.
Yeah. Good deal. But yeah, so I was looking on the carbon literacy website as well, and I was saying that you guys not only offer people to be carbon literate, but also organizations.
Yeah.
And it's really great because I was looking on the SWE page and I was coming across all the logos.
Yeah.
And there is over or around 200 organizations.
Yeah, that's right.
On that website, all within the UK. And so I'm going to name them to you now. No.
We'd be here all day.
Yeah, yeah. But I was like seeing the ones like Northwoods Housing, Doc 10, Jacobs in Manchester, ITV Studios, and BBC as well. They all give reviews like about their...
Yeah, some of those organisations would have received the training. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's really great. Like the ITV Studios, I'm like... Coronation Street, like,
yeah.
has a place in my heart. And one of the things with becoming with these organizations being carbon literate, they've earned a rating, like an award. So yeah. they can be platinum, gold, silver, or bronze.
Yeah, that's right. So essentially just like an individual can become trained, so can an organization, so can a trainer. With organizations, it is that tiered scheme, an accreditation scheme. So yeah, it all kind of the tier that your organization gets accredited at is the level of action that you've taken, and how embedded carbon literacy is within your workforce. So there will be like criteria for different percentages of your workforce trained. You know, at certain levels you'll have to produce like a case study, you'll have to influence your wider community or another organization. It's all different levels of action that you can take. Bronze really is that entry, hence why there's so many bronze CLOs out there. it does become increasingly more difficult to climb the CLO ladder, but it is possible, and a lot of amazing benefits come along with that.
That's absolutely crazy to hear. When I always like seeing the ratings, like, you know, it's like platinum, gold or silver, but the likes of we at BPP, we work a lot with BREEAM. It's kind of like it's a building accreditation award that's given to a building, and it can be in it can be like, you know, it gives the written outstanding, excellent, very good, and it's like someone's like, well done, like you did good, kid. Okay, you did good.
Yeah, yeah, keep it up.
Keep it up. Yes, exactly. That's really great. Okay, well, Catherine, we've come to the section of the podcast where I spit some facts at you, and I get your take on them. So I try and like name these a fun name, And okay. I thought this was going to be amazing. I was like, Project Carbon, like, you know, wow, groundbreaking. It's going to be like, you know, an MI5 types of project.
Oh, yeah.
Centipede or something like that. But I have to say, the hashtag It's Carbon Lit, like, it's still taking me. I'm still reeling from it. Like, you know, I can't believe it. But yes, okay. So it's kind of a two-part question. So carbon, we're talking a lot about being carbon literate. And with the carbon literacy course, I've actually did mine last Thursday.
Nice.
With the 30 under 30. Very, very informative, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
I thought being in the sector for 8 years now, I was like, yeah, here, most of the stuff. No. So I was like, so cool. Like, yeah. It is absolutely class. And one of the things I did before, I'm sidetracking from the question, sorry, but apologies, we'll get back to that before. but you're like, they gave us, they sent over a wee quiz that we can do to see, so we can see our carbon impact.
Uh-huh.
And after you filled in the quiz, it's like, okay, you're a carbon consumer, or you're a carbon, like, you know, you're a carbon friend. And then I actually did it the first time. I was like, you're a carbon thief. And I'm like, wow, whoa,
oh, no.
what? Excuse me. And I think it was something to do with the airplanes I put in. But I'm like, I don't do that anymore. It's fine. Like,
yeah.
But
small changes.
Yeah, small changes. Exactly. But I'll link that in this podcast episode in case anyone wants to know their carbon.
That'd be very cool. I actually don't think I know what the quiz you're talking about is, but okay. I would love to see it and where I rank on
yes.
that. I'd like to think I'm a carbon friend.
Yeah. You know, because I thought it's like, yeah, I'm gonna sit this, no problem.
Yeah.
But it's like, but the big stuff. And
yeah,
one of the things it said in the course as well was about the impact of driving a car.
I was just gonna talk about this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And like, I didn't realize like how big like it was.
Yeah.
And I kind of thought, well, the likes of, it was all kind of junked in together with public transport,
mm-hmm.
And like stuff like that. But I'm like, oh no, like it's way up there. Like,
yeah, I know. It's so difficult, especially like where we're from, you know, in Northern Ireland, there's not an awful lot of transport justice.
Yeah.
There's not many transport options. People are, I mean, somewhat forced to have a car.
Yeah,
you know, it's very difficult to get around otherwise. And as well, I think it's just kind of the culture here as well. People just love their cars. They take so much pride in it. Like,
yeah
having a nice car, a nice mm-hmm. house, like, yeah, kind of like materialistic things are like,
it's funny because my twin sister Niamh, shout out to Niamh, she doesn't, I don't think she listens to this, but it's fine. she doesn't drive, and I've been driving since like the last 10 years.
Yeah.
And it's funny to see the difference. Like, she always like is like, here, can I get a lift here, please? But then see like the likes of public transport,
mm-hmm.
she knows those times tables. Like, she's just like, oh, here, we can get the 54 bus that will get us in for this time. And it's like, well, the knowledge. Whereas like, you know, with the, I used to be like that when, like, you know, I didn't drive.
Yeah.
But then with the knowledge of that, she's like, oh, it's like, you know, maybe she doesn't need a car. She can just get public transport. Like,
definitely. I mean, I think the best place for it is Belfast, although mm-hmm. like, you know, it could be significantly better. Where I'm from, you know, there's no hope of relying on public transport. Like, I would have to walk 20 minutes from my house in the countryside to get a bus into Oma to then go anywhere else, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, it's very difficult, and like that's what I mean whenever I say we're like somewhat forced to drive. It's like you do have to have a car, especially in the rural areas, but there is like a transport justice issue with that, where people who want to take climate action by not relying on a carbon intensive mode of transport, or even for the likes of disabled people, or even just for people who don't want to drive.
Yeah.
There needs to be better options. So I'm glad that like the new train station is going to be opening soon. I hope that is like a sign of the times, that there's going to be more train options.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's like a couple of trains to Dublin every day, and then maybe one or two to Derry every day. And
yeah,
it's
like, come on, like, you know, give us more. Yeah, because I've seen it. I've been I'm such a hypocrite now. I've been driving past it, like,
Yeah, exactly.
and then, like, you know, seeing it being built, I'm like, oh, what that's going to be like.
Yeah, it is pretty cool. I feel like I've completely sidetracked from your original question. I'm so sorry.
Okay. Well, it's kind of like a two-part question. And I say questions, it is one question because I'm like, oh, yeah, this will be a good chunk of fun. So are you aware of the term, which in your line of work you probably are you aware of the term carbon negative?
Yes.
Yes. And so carbon negative is when a country absorbs more carbon than it emits. So it's really looked upon as really green, really beneficial, really nice for the environment.
Mm-hmm.
So the country that does this is, can you guess the country that does
this? I actually think I can.
Really?
I actually think I can, yeah. Yes. Okay. I'm going to be so proud of myself if I get this right. Mm. Is it Bhutan?
Yes, it is. Yes. Oh, my goodness. In the Eastern Himalayas, yeah.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Yeah. I think the reason why it is carbon negative as well, correct me if I'm wrong, is because it's got such a high percentage of forest cover.
Exactly. Yep. That's what I've got here as well.
And fun fact about Ireland, actually, has one of the lowest percentages of forest cover in the world, which is, you know, surprisingly ironic for the Emerald Isle.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. I didn't know this.
Although it is super green here and there is a lot of forestry, but there once was more.
Yeah. There's a wee place I go walk in. In Ballyclare,
mm-hmm.
and that's where my friend is. and there's a wee place we go walk in, and we go up this we park at this wee valley, and it's lovely because you can see out. It's like behind Cave Hill.
Yeah,
you can see out. You can see the wind turbines going. You're like, beautiful, and then you walk up and you see it's where they grow the Christmas trees.
Oh, okay.
I'm like, oh, this is really beautiful. And then just come December, they're all like...
They're all gone.
Yeah, and it's like, wow. It's
so sad, isn't
it?
Yeah, I know. And it actually kind of leads me to just a quick fact about offsets. Mm-hmm. A lot of carbon offsetting is in relation to, like, tree planting schemes, just like you said, there's one thing to plant a tree. It's another thing to actually see it through its entire lifespan of 30, 40 years. And that's, like, for the offset to be worthwhile, it has to reach that stage.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the time, we don't know what lifespan it's achieving.
Exactly.
Due to different things, crop failure, temperature changes,
mm-hmm.
maintenance.
Yeah.
It's so difficult to know. And that's why we at the Carbon Literacy Project will discourage offsets.
Right. Okay. That is really interesting to hear because I know one of the things for the likes of planning that London does.
Mm-hmm.
So any buildings are being built, they have to meet a certain carbon target. And they try to achieve they try to encourage be carbon neutral,
if
your development, if it's going to emit this amount of carbon, make sure or if it's projected to emit this amount of carbon, make sure it's taken away this amount of carbon.
Yeah.
And one of the ways it does that is for every carbon or for every ton you go over your the amount you actually emit, put 90 pounds, 95 pounds of that into the carbon offset fund.
Yeah.
And the London have this carbon offset fund.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing I was actually thinking about the other day. I'm like, is there any, where are the projects from that? I want to see what's actually.
Exactly. The evidence behind the programs is such an issue as well because there's a huge lack of it.
Mm-hmm.
The wider problem with carbon offsetting, just on what you said, is that it gives people an excuse to continue emitting carbon at the rate that they are. There's nothing there to discourage people from doing so, but really what we need to do is inspire them to take different actions or pick a different approach to their work, a lower carbon approach, mm-hmm. so that they emit less.
Okay, yeah. Again, you've come out with a number of things this podcast that I'm like, I really like that. Like, you know, I'm going to use that in like another sentence. Okay.
I'm glad.
But yeah, so I've actually got a follow up to the question as well. And it's not so much a question, but like, can you guess what Bhutan is also referred to as? I'll say this now, it's nothing to do with carbon or environment. It's literally just, I thought, like, a cool name.
Oh, okay. So I'm guessing it's nothing to do with forests?
No.
Oh, I have no idea.
Okay. It's also referred to as the land of the thunder dragon.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's nice. I'm gonna use that.
Yeah. I feel like that tells us, you know, it gives us a little insight to their ancient history as well.
Yes. And it's actually also the thing as well. Bhutan, they take a more holistic approach,
mm-hmm.
As well. Like, they're not so worried about the things that maybe us in the UK or America or China, that, like, you know, we do that to create carbon.
Yeah.
They more focus on happiness. I think.
Like, yes, I've heard about this as well. Yeah.
There's I think, is it the WHO, but there's a World Happiness Index, and Bhutan is up there. I'm
like, I think we all need to take a bit of inspo from Bhutan.
Yeah, but definitely. Well, we'll go there on holiday, like, you know, just like,
oh yeah,
okay, work, you need to pay for this, like, excursion, you need to pay for this sabbatical, okay? But yeah, so that's great. Okay, so thanks for playing Project Carbon, which might be renamed to It's Carbon Lit section. We'll see, or hashtag It's Carbon Lit. But yeah, so you're talking about the likes of, you've talked about your activities that you do in your job. So the reposting of campaigns. Mm-hmm. Can I ask you, what's your favourite part of the job? Like, what do you love to see happening?
Oh my God. That's a tough question. My favourite part. I feel like what's really exciting is whenever you spend weeks or months planning ahead of a project or a campaign or an event, and then you finally see it come to fruition, or the event takes place, or the campaign mm-hmm. is launched, or the campaign ends and it's really successful. I think that's something that you get a lot of satisfaction from that. And especially something that we've been doing kind of more so in the last couple of years is the Carbon Literacy Action Day, which is an annual event. It's the largest climate education training event of its kind.
Oh my goodness.
Just a little plug. it's in its fourth year at the minute. Okay. So yeah, we've launched the date. It's taking place later on this year, on the 14th of November. Sorry, I didn't mean to come on and promote this.
Yeah, but it's just, here, please do. That's awesome. Hey.
Yeah, it is. It's a super exciting time. It's essentially our answer to a global movement.
Okay.
And it takes place at the same time as the annual COP conference. So the first one was in November 2021 when COP 26 took place in Glasgow. This year it will take place while COP 29 takes place in Azerbaijan.
Yeah.
So yeah, each year it aligns with that. And our tagline is kind of, while world leaders meet to discuss and negotiate on climate policy, carbon literacy learners will be on the ground learning, taking action, becoming empowered to do their bit. It's a super inspiring time. Obviously, the key is we're trying to have as many people trained in a single day as possible. It's kind of, you know, like a bit of novelty, a bit of a challenge. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, last year on the third action day, we had 2,303 learners trained on that day. So it doesn't mean that they got certified on that day. They just completed their training. But that was completely record-breaking for us. It was such a super exciting time. And for me, I play a role in the communications aspect of the campaign. So everything from now, like this time of year, with the launch of the campaign. So we've just recently launched it at the start of this month. And everything now for the next couple of months until the event takes place in November. Just communicating with different audiences, ensuring the public is aware of it, making sure anyone who wants to become carbon literate or deliver carbon literacy training on the day finds out about it and can do so. So yeah, it's a very exciting time. And yeah, hopefully we're gonna smash our target for this year.
That's class. I'll definitely try and get BPP involved.
Like. Oh my God, yes. We need like a BPP carbon literacy course.
Yes.
To like, yeah, adapt the framework and make a course for your organization.
Oh my God, I look forward to future collaboration. Like,
many thanks.
Oh, well, brilliant. Catherine, thank you so much. You've been an absolute delight to have on the podcast.
I'm glad to say. This has been very exciting.
See, just before we go, do you have any advice to any future aspiring people who might want to end up in the energy sector?
In the energy sector, I'm not sure. I don't have an awful lot of like experience with that exactly, but in terms of the wider environmental sector, I suppose pick your area of interest. In this case, there was probably a lot of energy listeners. Find organizations, groups, any kind of networks that you can involve yourself in. Try and meet like-minded people. If it means volunteering or working for free at the start, You know, give it a go. You never know what opportunities might arise from that. I started off as a volunteer at the Carbon Literacy Project and never imagined it turning into this. And it's a job that I absolutely love. So, yeah, I suppose what I said earlier, follow your interest, follow your passion, and a job will come from there.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Catherine. And you'll definitely be back on.
Yeah. Yeah, we need to do this on this exact date next year.
Yeah, yeah.
See what all has changed.
We're like, okay, the world's on fire.
Oh God. Not if there's enough carbon dioxide citizens.
See, this is it. That's a good plug. Like, that's it. Okay, well, brilliant. Thanks, Catherine, again. Okay, thanks for listening to Carbon Climates. If you follow us on Instagram @carbon_climates, you can keep up to date with all our latest posts, news, and episode uploads. Okay, thanks for listening. Bye.